The part I was going to do is just an overview of a number of different recollections that can be done and the way the reflective meditations can be picked up based on the need at different times. Because sometimes it can be a little bit difficult if it's just looking at the Noble Eightfold Path with right thought, thoughts of renunciation, thoughts of non-harming, thoughts of non-ill will. It's nice to have it fleshed out a bit more. And what can we be thinking of at different times? What can we be recollecting? Because the mind is going to be thinking all the time anyway, so trying to curb it in more of a positive direction. And so there's a series of very short suttas which I'll just read from. And then I'll take it from there. And the way the Buddha does this is by each one, it says there's this one thing when developed and cultivated or contemplated that it leads to dispassion, cessation, peace, nibbana, and then there's the next thing, and he says there's just this one thing, and then there's the next one, and he says this one thing. So I kind of like that way of speaking because it shows that they're all of the same nature. All these contemplations are leading in the same direction. This is Anguttara Nikaya, Book of the Ones, starting with Sutta 296 and ending with Sutta 305. Bhikkhus, there is one thing that, when developed and cultivated, leads exclusively to disenchantment, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nibbana. What is that one thing? Recollection of the Buddha. This is that one thing that, when developed and cultivated, leads exclusively to disenchantment, to nibbana. Bhikkhus, there is one thing that, when developed and cultivated, leads exclusively to disenchantment, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nibbana. What is that one thing? Recollection of the Dhamma. Recollection of the Sangha. Recollection of virtuous behavior. Recollection of generosity. Recollection of the Devas. Mindfulness of breathing. Mindfulness of death. Mindfulness directed to the body. Recollection of peace. This is that one thing that, when developed and cultivated, leads exclusively to disenchantment, to nibbana. So, I guess just starting with recollection of Buddha Dhamma Sangha, this is something we do in the chanting every day, and actually taking it on as a contemplation, as a recollection, is important. And also it ties together with a teaching of Vajramahabhua where he said at a certain point he realized Buddha Dhamma Sangha were one and the same. And so then it makes sense where the Buddha says there's this one thing when developed and cultivated, recollection of the Buddha. There's this one thing when developed and cultivated, recollection of the Dhamma. There's this one thing when developed and cultivated, recollection of the Sangha. So it's all one thing. It all leads to the same place. So, and virtuous behavior, generosity, the Devas, and so on. These all. Recollecting these things, it all leads to a sense of disenchantment. So these are actual thoughts and recollections. The Buddha also puts in mindfulness of breathing in there, so not just doing mindfulness of breathing, but actually recollecting mindfulness of breathing, that it's a possibility, or just stopping during the day for 5 minutes and taking a few deep breaths, that can be really important. That's something I've done during the work periods here. If there's a lot happening, or if there's a big project or something, stopping for a minute and just taking a deep breath and checking in with the posture and resting just for a minute, and that can make a big difference as to how the day goes. In recollection of the Buddha, it's like, what would the Buddha do in this situation? So we can, and then that links up with virtuous behavior as well. So like any situation that we have to face, or difficult situations in our lives that we all have, whether it's difficulty with family or work, or those seem to be the two things that most people have the most difficulties with. We can bow before the Buddha, recollect the Buddha, even ask the Buddha for help. That's one type of recollection of the Buddha. Wondering, you know, what would be the appropriate thing to do in this situation? What would the Buddha say to do? Or the Dhamma, recollecting the Dhamma. So in any given situation, what's the correct action by body, speech, or mind according to Dhamma? So that's the Dhamma, New Dhamma, Patipada. That's practicing Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma. One of the main factors of stream entry is practicing Dhamma in accordance with Dhamma. So recollecting the Dhamma is really necessary for that kind of thing. And that's also Dhamma Vichaya. That's just thinking about Dhamma all the time. And there was one time we met up with Lungpor Ban, and he was giving a talk to his lay people, and he said, you know, to actually, if you want to succeed in your practice, you have to think a lot. And people are kind of wondering, what is he saying? And I was even wondering, did I mishear him? Did I mistranslate that? And so then he said it again. He said, yes, you have to think a lot. If you want to succeed in your practice, you have to be thinking quite a lot. And then he said, you have to think all the time about Dhamma. If you're thinking about Dhamma all the time, then you can succeed. So that's recollecting the Dhamma. Or you can recollect like the qualities of the Dhamma, just like we do in the chanting. Anyone who's memorized the chanting, and putting in a plug for people who have been coming here for years to try to memorize the chanting. It's a good thing to get that sense of having it internalized. That's apparent here and now, timeless, inviting one to come and see, to be personally experienced by the wise. So we chant that in Pali and English all the time. And then there's recollection of Sangha. So that's like all these things are always linked together. So like recollection of Sangha would just be recollecting the community, but that also links again with the recollection of virtue. And it also links up with having good friends like Meghya. The first thing the Buddha is saying to Meghya to ripen his mind for liberation is to associate with good friends and companions in the holy life. And that's Sangha, that's the recollection of Sangha. And Lungpor Cha has this one teaching where he said his practice got to a certain point where he could think of the Buddha and he would just burst out crying out of faith and gratitude. And his practice got to that point where recollection of the Buddha became very, very powerful for him, and he could bring up immense faith, joy, happiness just by thinking for a short while about the Buddha, about the amazing qualities that the Buddha had, the historical Buddha, just thinking about what he actually gave up having given up so much, and in a way having given up so much just for the sake of everybody that he eventually taught, out of compassion. And not wanting to get happiness for himself, but actually seeking the true right liberation. So the incredible sacrifice that takes, and the incredible dedication and resolve that the Buddha had, that we're able to tap into that now, just because this one person did that, chose to do that, to do the practice and actually reach completion through his own efforts. So that's recollection of our three refuges, Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. And we also can recollect those three refuges when we actually take refuge. We can actually rely on these things and take these as something which is going to lead us in the right direction. And if we have any doubts about Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, then to actually recollect them and think about the great qualities of Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and that can help to clear up any doubts we might have about them. So we might think like, well, you know, Hinduism seems pretty good right now. I'm not so sure about Buddhism. It's a lot of work and just have to do all this barami building, and maybe I'll try some other religion. So then recollecting Buddha Dhamma Sangha can help re-inspire us or get us back on track and get us sort of willing to do the work that needs to be done. A recollection of virtue, if we have this sense of like wanting to give up or thinking, oh my, you know, my, I've been practicing so long and nothing's come of it. But then we can bring up the recollection of virtue, and we can just recollect how long we've kept precepts for. And if it's been a number of years or been quite a long time, that can help overcome that state of just thinking we haven't gotten anywhere. So I've done this many times where I thought, well, you know, the mind is just not getting any better. It's just falling back to the same old habits. But then that recollection of virtue would come up almost automatically, just that there is some power in that recollection of just the sheer time that we've kept precepts for. And that's like this, on the extreme level of that recollection, there's this monk in the Theragata. He's the one who's been ordained for 25 years, and he's lamenting that he hasn't had a moment of peace. He's been practicing really hard and he hasn't gotten any peace in 25 years, and he's going to commit suicide. He's at his wit's end, so he's going to hang himself. So he's got the noose around his neck, and then he recollects his own virtue. He's never committed a serious offense in all that 25 years, and he brings up such joy and rapture in him that it sort of catapults his mind into liberation. And he's got these utterances, you know, something like, you know, with the noose around my neck, I saw the deathless right there, or something like that. I can't remember that one, but it's quite a good image. So that recollection of virtue got him through that particular moment. And recollection of generosity, like if we've done a lot of work or offered meals to the Sangha or worked hard in the kitchen to help feed the monastics, or we've helped other people, helped our relatives in the past, then that's a recollection of generosity, that the work we do isn't in vain. It actually has these long-term effects. And sometimes we might even see something that was done that's good, and we've forgotten that we were the ones who did it, even. I know there was someone once who offered quite an expensive tool to the monastery, and later they visited and they had forgotten that they actually had were the ones who offered that tool, that was actually them, so that could bring up some joy and, oh yeah, I'm the one who offered that actually. So, recollection of generosity. recollection of devas. We don't really teach this one so much in the West. So, sorry, can't get the benefit from it. You want to hear about devas? Well, usually the recollection goes that to recollect the causes for being reborn in these celestial realms that the Buddha talks about, and that's generosity, renunciation, keeping precepts. It links together with all the other recollections, contemplations. So the immense happiness, we can contemplate the immense happiness in the deva world that a deva would actually experience. And the Buddha said that the happiness of a deva is, so if you think of the most possible happiness a human being could experience, and the Buddha brings up the example of a Chakawatin, a wheel-turning monarch. And he said, when the wheel-turning monarch, someone who's righteously conquered the entire earth and is ruling peacefully over the earth as a wheel-turning monarch, a wheel-turning king, then he'll survey his accomplishments and everything he has, and he might experience great happiness on that occasion. And then he said, that's not even 1/16, or that's not even a smidgen of the happiness that a deva experiences in its normal everyday life. So that the happiness of devas is quite refined and quite extreme by human standards. So then the causes to be reborn in that type of a world would be generosity, renunciation. The Buddha talked about there is different levels of deva realms. We don't have to get into that here, but just thinking of devas in general, the Buddha talked about his own past lives and that doing things like going without. So like you might want or need something, but to have a practice of going without, that was also a cause for him to be reborn in deva worlds. So, and specifically virtue, that's a big one. They talk about the eight precepts, the renunciate precepts, being a big cause for the deva world. So we can recollect our own deva-like qualities, and that then becomes a recollection of the devas. So I might just do a short 10-minute meditation, or maybe even 5 to 10 minutes. So getting on in time here, and just to try and guide you through checking in with whatever our thought process is doing currently. Maybe we feel a little bit tired or worn out, or we feel comfortable, or we might feel a little bit uncomfortable, and just seeing what's the current state of our body and mind. And just trying to think about the Buddha in whatever way we can. It could be a mental image, or it could just be saying the word Buddha in our mind. And just trying to imagine that the Buddha is here with us, watching us, and we're meditating with the Buddha. And we can just imagine the Buddha as part of a recollection of Buddha, Buddha Nusati. The Buddha is here looking after us, looking over us compassionately. Hoping that all of us will succeed in our practice and come to growth in Dhamma. And we can imagine that the worse we are, the more low and unhelpable we are, the more the Buddha's going to put effort into helping us. He really wants to see us succeed. Now we can bring up the word Dhamma in the mind. The Dhamma being the Four Noble Truths. The hallmark teaching of Buddhas. Dukkha, the cause of dukkha, cessation of dukkha, and the path leading to the cessation of dukkha. Sangha, bringing up the word Sangha. For many of us, this can bring up faith, past great Sangha members, Ajahn Mun, Ajahn Chah, or any other great Ajahns who have inspired faith in us. This is Sangha, those who are practicing the path of virtue. There's actually people in this world who are humble, who just take whatever is provided for them, whatever is given. There's people in this world who are able to be at ease with each other, harmonious with each other. Experiencing joy based on one another's presence. Based on a Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, these three jewels, these three treasures, three refuges. And they empower us when we recollect them. They empower us to practice, to walk the path. And it wasn't listed as one of the recollections, but we can also bring up a sense of gratitude for these things. Used correctly and recollected often, Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and these three things can be of great assistance to us, and they are there to assist us along the way. And then just at the end, we can take just a few mindful breaths, Anapanasati, this recollection of Anapanasati. Allowing the mind to settle however it's going to settle. So maybe one or two questions before we hand it back over to Longpa for finishing up. I think having the mind somewhat calm is good always. You know, Anapanasati can be good. It doesn't have to be done in a really focused way. You know, if you're going to and from work, like I've heard of people doing butto, like breathing in but breathing out to, and while driving, and still focusing on the road and everything, of course. But that. I've heard that that's been helpful for people, but in general, it's Anapanasati is always good to come back to. If we're not able to bring up the recollections or the mind is just too scattered, then it's good to just stop, take a deep breath, or a few deep breaths, and consciously calm the body, experience the body, and that can be quite helpful.
You had mentioned the example of a monk who wanted to commit suicide and he remembered his virtue and that uplifted him. In Samyutta Nikaya, there are a few instances where monks committed suicide, but Buddha said that they attained Nibbana. So, how is that possible?
I think that's extremely rare. Like there's, what was the name of the monk who used the knife? That was, anyway, that's, yeah, there is, he was going in and out of jhana.
Wakali.
Huh?
Wakali.
I guess that might be one, that wasn't the one I was thinking of, but yeah, the, where he uses, he's going in and out of temporary liberations of mind and decides to time his suicide while he's absorbed in one of these things, I guess. And then the Buddha says, oh, see that dark cloud going back and forth? That's Mara, the evil one. He can't find the citta of this one because he attained final Nibbana. So that, but I don't think any of us would recommend this. And, perhaps it is possible, but not, I wouldn't say it's so likely. Yeah. Possible, but not probable. Usually, we would teach that suicide, you know, suicide is normally an act done in great despair, and that that act actually would, it doesn't solve the problem. It would, as the mind continues on, it would increase the confusion.
I just want to say thank you because I've never heard the Buddha Nusati, the recollection of the Buddha in terms of him sitting next to me and loving kindness towards me and wish for success and following the Dhamma. It's like a combination of the two, the guided meditations. And it was much easier to feel loving kindness thinking of him directing it towards me than me doing it to myself. It's really neat. But I can you just speak a little bit more about that one recollection of the devas and recalling renunciation, going without, and how to use that skillfully and how that can be used not skillfully. Sometimes
I think it could be used skillfully in terms of contentment. So like not in terms of going without, in terms of like making ourselves go without in order to harm ourselves in some way or even punish ourselves, but that if there's something, if what we want or need isn't available or present, then to be able to develop, have a sense of contentment even without the things that we would normally make use of. So like, for example, it is almost unheard of that it would happen now, but sometimes in the early days of a Bhayagiri, there might not be enough food offered. So like there would be less food than normal. So that would be a sense of going without. There's nothing we can do about it. It's just, that's all there is. There's beans and bread and peanut butter and, you know, and a bag of nachos or something. And so just being able to be content with things like that, I think it has to be coupled with a contemplation of contentment, and that way it's like we're never dissatisfied. We can live in almost any situation, and we don't experience the same kind of suffering. It's like we could kind of go into panic mode, or sort of like bemoaning our situation and why does this always happen to me, or like getting sick, like being able to go without good health. So we just can't have it in that moment. So rather than getting into a state of like, oh, I must have so much bad karma or something, you know, just say, well, this is just the way it is, and trying to be as content as possible in that situation. So being able to mindfully and equanimously go without, that's, the Buddha praised that quite a lot. Yeah.
So it's not so much about creating situations where you go without to train yourself.
Certainly the Buddha would have done that, and at a certain level, yes, you can do that. Things like fasting or on the most extreme level, the Buddha did these extreme austerities, which he then criticized after doing them. But so people can try things out and try to push their limits. Going without sleep on the lunar observance day, that's something we normally do to try to, that's like our practice of going without, is say like you want to go to sleep at 9 or 10 p.m. or whatever, and so we just go without every so often, and that helps us to build up that sense of contentment and resilience and being able to exist outside of our self-perceived or self-created comfort zones. Yeah. Going without, you know, our 3 p.m. yoga session even, or whatever, you know, oh, I can't miss that. But what if something comes up? Being able to be adaptable. It's 3:40, gone over a little bit.
Okay, so we'll look to tie it all together, put a ribbon on it, put a bow on top. There are a few things that come to mind as we reflect on this. Yeah, the use of directing of the thought processes and bringing to mind and directed, using directed thought. And one is the idiom that is used in the one of the readings that that was recommended in the in the handout or the in the intro for the in the announcement, and that's the Mahanama Sutta, which was Anguttara 9, Sutta number 10, and there's a refrain that goes through the whole sutta, and this is bringing to mind these the six recollections, which are the most common in terms of when the Buddha talks of the different anusatis or the recollections. These are the most common: Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, generosity, virtue, and the devas. And the Buddha says, and when someone recollects these different thoughts, and on that occasion, the mind is not obsessed by lust, hatred, or delusion. On that occasion, the mind is simply straight, based on Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, virtue, generosity, devas. Which I really love that idiom. The mind is simply straight, and based on that, and then one whose mind is straight gains inspiration in the meaning, gains inspiration in the Dhamma, gains joy connected with the Dhamma. When their joyful rapture arises, for one with a rapturous mind, the body becomes tranquil. One tranquil in body feels pleasure. For one feeling pleasure, the mind becomes concentrated. This is just a normal process, and it's quite beautiful to reflect on that. And this is called a noble disciple who dwells in balance amid an unbalanced population, who dwells unafflicted amid an afflicted population. And so that we have this opportunity to direct attention in these skillful ways, to using the thought processes and recognizing that when we do apply the mind in a skillful way, the mind is just, it's not obsessed by greed, hatred, and delusion. It's just, we're making a very conscious choice to direct our attention towards something that is skillful. When we do that, it's going straight to the Dhamma, which is again another, when like a recollection of Sangha, one who is, one of the qualities of recollection of Sangha, Uchupatipanno, one who practices directly. But Uchu is straight. That's okay. Here we are. There's the goal. Go for it. And by making that choice and doing it over and over again, and then it's a source of inspiration that brings a joy. So that's an interesting idiom that is used on a frequent basis. And also as I've been listening, then one of the suttas that came to mind we didn't put in the readings. We have a brainstorming session before the a few weeks or a month before, trying to figure what's going to be useful for people. But one of the suttas that I was reminded of as we've been talking today is the Anuruddha Sutta, which is Anguttara 8, Sutta number 30, and it's about the eight thoughts of a great person, and that is the Buddha is speaking to and teaching Anuruddha, who is one of his foremost disciples. He's also the Buddha's cousin, so there. But also Anuruddha is a great meditator and very familiar with the various realms of existence. But then the Buddha is bringing him back down to earth and paying. These are the eight thoughts of a great person. And he said, but also there's this, it's good that you think these thoughts of a great person. And so the thoughts are, this Dhamma is for one who is modest, not for one who is self-aggrandizing. This Dhamma is for one who is content, not for one who is discontent. This Dhamma is one for one who is reclusive, not for one who is entangled. This Dhamma is for one whose persistence is aroused or his energy is aroused, not for one who is lazy. This Dhamma is for one whose mindfulness is established, not for one whose mindfulness is confused. This Dhamma is for one whose mind is centered and is a samadhi. Not for one whose mind is uncentered. And then this Dhamma is for one endowed with discernment, not for one whose discernment is weak. Anuruddha, think the eighth thought of a great person. This Dhamma is for one who enjoys non-objectification, who delights in non-objectification, not for one who enjoys and delights in objectification. And the word objectification is papancha, which is sometimes translated as objectification or proliferation or complication. As that this Dhamma is for one who enjoys non-complication, who delights in non-complication or non-proliferation, that sense of not putting too much. But then he goes on and says, when you think these eight thoughts of a great person, then whenever you want, quite withdrawn from sensuality, withdrawn from unskillful qualities, you will enter and remain in the first jhana. Then he goes through all the four jhanas. So it's like, you're using these thoughts to uplift the mind, to brighten the mind, and it's that those thoughts of contentment, of seclusion, of modesty or humility, of effort, of mindfulness, of discernment, and of non-proliferation. And it is those thoughts that pull one toward settling, states of settled mind, heightened mental states, providing a pleasant abiding in the here and now. And that's so it's something that is, as you live contented, it will serve for your delight, for a comfortable abiding, for non-agitation, for alighting on Nibbana. And so it's this beautiful imagery. But the catalyst is thought. Mm-hmm. Using the thought process, directing the thought processes in a skillful way, and bringing up thoughts that are beneficial and supportive of one's well-being. And one of the ones that we did put in to the readings was the Girimananda Sutta, which is there's a monk who is sick, and and the Buddha instructs Ananda to go and visit this monk who's sick, and he's afflicted with illness, and he said, speak to him about 10 perception. And perceptions are also like the, you know, bring, again, this, you're lifting up a way of framing experience, like perceiving our experience in a certain way. And so that's, you're using thought, but in this particular, I mean, they're so close, and in this one, it's the Buddha is using sanya. So like, and the first one is a perception of impermanence, so anicca sanya. But how do you stimulate the perception of impermanence? Well, you think about things that are impermanent. You bring up the thought of, well, what is impermanent? And your mind dwells on that experience of impermanence, and so that it affects the mind in a skillful way. So, but using that perception helps the, again, you're turning your thought in a certain way. So that he uses perception of impermanence, perception of non-self, perception of unattractiveness, perception of danger, perception of abandoning or like relinquishing, letting go, a perception of dispassion, a perception of cessation, a perception of non-delight in the entire world, pulling back from the world. And then the last one is, and then perception of mindfulness and breathing. And there's perception of impermanence in all conditioned phenomena, so that it's taking it to sort of a universal level. And then the last is mindfulness of breathing. And it's coming back. There's your anchor. Because if you start bringing up that impermanence, you start thinking, the mind starts thinking too much or pondering too much or proliferating, then come back to mindfulness of breathing. Let things settle. Bring it back to something tangible, the body, the breath coming in, breath going out. But you're working on this sense of a balance. So these are, and as like the overall topic today is meditation. And to realize that these are meditative tools. There's part of our toolkit in our meditation practice. Learning how to lift up thought, lift up the lift up memory. Lift up that turning of the mind, recollection, perception, in order so that they say, oh, the mind that is turning to that, it is not proliferating with greed, it's not proliferating with hatred, it's not proliferating with delusion, the roots of defilement. I think one of the things I wanted to talk about to wrap it all up is also one of the in one of the in the Ajahn Yaniko brought up the 10 anusati, the 10 recollections, and it's the last one on the recollections of peace. And upasama anusati, upasama is peace, peacefulness, and to consciously direct our attention to the that which is the peace of, or the peace of Nibbana, that sense of settling, cooling, the Buddha says says to the monks, if even for the lasting of a finger snap a monk should practice the recollection of the peace of Nibbana, such a one may be called a monk. He is one whose meditation is not fruitless. He abides doing the master's bidding, takes advice, and eats the country's alms food to some purpose. What could I not say of those who make much of recollection of the peace of Nibbana? That's that encouragement. Recollecting the goal, recollecting the that ultimate purpose, and realizing that that's what we're doing all this for, is to bring the heart to a place of real true peace and true sense of fulfillment. There's also in that Girimananda Sutta, there is the recollection or the perception of dispassion, perception of cessation, which are described in exactly the same way, and there's an idiom that comes up both in recollecting dispassion, but also recollecting Nibbana, recollecting the goal, and that the translation, it's almost, and some places it's a recollection, some places it's like a kind of like an exclamation, and this is peaceful, this is sublime, that is the stilling of all activities, the relinquishment of all acquisitions, the destruction of craving, dispassion, Nibbana. And again, as a recollection of the goal, recollection of peace, the function of the goal is to, this, or the nature of that, this is peaceful, this is sublime. And in the, I'll read the Pali for those who might be familiar with some of the Pali, but etang santang, etang panitang, yadidang sambasankara samata, sambubhandi patinisago, tanhakayo virago nibbhanati. And one of the things that struck me with this is that the language is not the kind of gung-ho, kill the defilements, gung-ho, strive till your blood dries up and your bones crumble and you sort of die under the Bodhi tree sort of thing. It's this is peaceful. This is sublime. So there's a lot more subtle. It's much more subtle, in that sense of this sense of this is peaceful. This is sublime. This etang santi is peaceful, and panitang is sublime, refined. It's refined. It's something that is really, it's not coarse. It's not crude. It's not in your face. You need to reflect on it carefully. Yadi Dung, that is Sabba Sankara Samatha. So it's like the stilling of all actives, the Sankara, and Sabba Sankara is all of the activities, the mental formations, the movement of the mind. It's Sabba Sankara Samatha. Samatha is, it's in the same as like Samatha meditations. Those are settling, tranquil. They're stilling, so that it. Again, it's not that sense of you've got to force these formations into stillness. This is like bring it to a place of settling and tranquility, allowing it to come to a place of settling and tranquility. Because we get so wound up sometimes trying to force things to be still and force the mind to be still. And the mind is just another formation. It's just doing what minds do. I mean, it just cranks it out, and we get entangled in it, and we believe that we're either for or against it. But all it's doing is it's just doing what mind's doing. So just letting it settle, letting it still. Sambu bandi pati nisago. So sambha is like all. Upadi is the basis of being, the basis of. Like upadi is the upadi is like your basis of identity, what we identify with, that we end up entangled with, and we create a sense of self around. So five khandhas: form, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness, that are bound up with attachment and clinging. And that the upadi is the base of where we identify and create a sense of I, me, and mine. But the patinisago is like releasing or letting go. Releasing, relinquishing, not holding on to that which we have there's a beautiful way that Ajahn Buddhadasa speaks of the sense of patinisago in terms of like releasing, relinquishing, letting go. And he says that it's like we have to get out of the habit of being thieves. We have to we're taking what doesn't belong to us, and we have to learn how to give back to nature what never belonged to us in the first part. So it's like, you know, we finally figured out, or we've been caught in the act of being, of stealing. And what are we stealing? Body, feeling, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness, these five khandhas. It never belonged to us in the first place. It's a part of nature, and we assume ownership over it. And we have to learn how to release it and give it back to nature. And that is what opens the heart into this sense of peace, the peace of Nibbana. is not something that you gain, that you get, that you claim ownership over. It's by relinquishing and releasing these bases of identity. And so that are so this sense, relinquishment of all acquisitions. And the last, destruction of craving. I mean, in the, it's usually translated as destruction of craving, or oftentimes it's translated as destruction. And the tanha kaya, and that's also it's a synonym for, it is a synonym for nibbana. Say the, and but it's also that tanha, of course, tanha is desire. Tanha kaya, kaya. Also, I mean, has many differences of meanings. But like wearing away, diminution, exhaustion, ending, destruction. So it's not, again, it's not this sort of, you know, going in there and destroying, but it's sort of like, it's being worn away through the process of right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right life. The Eightfold Path. We're setting in place the conditions that allow for it to be exhausted, to be for it to end, and so just giving ourselves to that process, and that sense of destruction of great dispassion. The word is viraga, and so raga is passion, vi is to sort of not, so dispassion. But it also has similarly has this equally valid translation of fading away, where this the kind of passion, craving, fascination, it fades. I mean, when one sees things clearly, the fascination fades away, and it doesn't have the same pull. Also, Nibbana is a word that had quite a mundane, because the Buddha used it as a term for the highest goal, it has very exalted connotations to it. But it also, it was a word that was used in common usage in the time of the Buddha, and it means cooling. So that if you had a pot of rice on the fire and it's boiled and it's more or less ready, you take it off the fire, you set it down, you let it nibbana, and it cools. It's cooling. It also has another connotation, which Ajahn Jeff, of course, uses a lot, unbinding. So that has a. So these are. It's not some ethereal realm of freedom from dukkha somewhere. It's where the entanglements that we are bound up by are unbound, or the things that heat us and agitate us are cooled and settled. So those are bringing up these recollections and the perception of peace. The peace of Nibbana it's a beautiful image to be reminding ourselves. And that's, of course, this use of thought and directed thought to to remind us of the goal. And then again, we can get really wound up, you know, some obsessive thought or some nursing some sort of grudge or something that is come, and you're reminding oneself, no, this is not what I'm doing this for. I'm doing it for the peace of Nibbana, and that's the possibility that one wants to hold out for oneself and realize that it's within. Because as soon as we turn the mind, then it's a whole different world that we're living in. We live in a world of irritation and aversion, and the whole world looks miserable. And you turn that, and we can experience something that is peaceful, that is sublime, and that is truly cool and settled. So that experimenting with it, playing with it, encouraging ourselves. So anyway, leave that for now and open it up for some questions.
I heard before, perception of unattractiveness.
Yes.
I just want to understand how apply that in my day-to-day life, or perception of unattractiveness.
Asubha is unattractive, usually unattractiveness of the body, and that tends to be a direct counterpoint to kind of sensual desire, sexual lust, so that reminding ourselves that, you know, as fascinating as as beautiful as we can make things, it's bound with this body that is, it's just getting old, you know, which is, and then it's, it's these elements, and it was like the bag of skin oozing from 9 holes, and the stuff is leaking from. You bring that up as, oh, okay. It has a very different experience on the mind. And so and it isn't sort of, but it is a counterpoint, recognizing that. Because as soon as we start objectifying, whether it's people or experiences that are an object of gratification, we are, you know, we're really diminishing ourselves and then diminishing others. So then this recollection of unattractiveness is, hey, wait a minute, that's not the whole picture. And come back to a place of, because there's a real cooling of the heart, a settling of the heart, when it's not obsessed with those trains of sensual desire, because desire it creates an object of fantasy that almost has nothing to do with reality. So it's trying to get that balance back in.
Instead of thinking of one thing which I was having difficulty with, brought to mind all the things that were working.
Yes, and it's really important, because we have to learn how to encourage ourselves rather than to undermine ourselves, I think it's a cultural habit. It's a very human habit that we tend to focus on what we're, you know, say on our flaws and faults rather than recognizing, okay, we've actually done something in this life, and we do have a sincerity and a commitment, and to make that very conscious. It's important. So that's where these recollections in directing thought is also very, very helpful. Because we do, one of the, say, the first qualities that the Buddha points to as a spiritual faculty is saddha, is faith. And faith is maybe not such a great word in English, and maybe a better word is confidence. And so that giving oneself confidence in the things that are really worthy of confidence, and that's a huge support for the practice.
Good. Along those lines, in addition to the specific recollections that have already been spoken about, and forgive me if I already missed this, but is there one about simply recalling one's own successes and good qualities, just as this
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, it might not have been as articulate as that, but I think it, you know, certainly is, you know, you start extrapolating when you pay attention to Buddha Dhamma Sangha virtues, and then virtue gets extended the qualities of you know, generosity, then gets folded into say kindness, and that's where the 10 baramis are, and I think this is helpful to to recollect how all of the different teachings are actually intertwined. I mean, there's all these different lists that come up all over the place, but in the end, that all of them are related, and they are, you're lifting up, and I think again a sense of giving oneself permission to let the mind range with thought over those things that do increase what is wholesome and skillful. And then to be relinquishing what is unskillful or unwholesome.
Just, I think one thing I'm going to use after this day is sort of to recollect this day and your kindness and teaching and the people that planned the Upasaka Day, Jinjira, Stan's practice. But sort of just recollect the kindness, because you wouldn't be offering this unless you thought it could benefit us.
Yeah. Okay, that inspires faith. It's good to know that we do put effort into it, and there's people that Tim and Jeannie Daskus and Jane Giro are the part of the kind of the committee, and we tend to put this is the last one of the year, and then there's there's an email goes out and asking for different ideas for next year, and then we have a brainstorming session sometime in the winter retreat. So, okay, how are we going to fit these suggestions into next year's program? And then as each one comes closer, then we sit down again. Okay, how are we going to structure this? Does it lend itself to maybe like small group meetings? Does it lend itself to a big group meeting? Where do we follow through? People put some effort into it. I think we started doing this a few years ago, and it really increased the benefit that comes. Quality, I think, definitely got better. Maybe we could end the day with a short sitting meditation. We've spent, well, sometimes sitting, sometimes mostly listening. Taking the opportunity to to recollect, to bring to mind things that are useful, that seem to resonate, basically kind of giving yourself permission as you go forward with your practice to use that faculty of thought to direct attention. Jnanico mentioned it. I think it's good to bring it to mind again. The Dhamma Vichaya, the investigation of Dhamma, recollection of Dhamma. That's a factor of awakening. There's in the seven bhojangas, the seven factors of awakening, that investigation of Dhamma. So different principles of Dhamma, different takes on Dhamma. That's a factor of awakening. It's mindfulness. Mindfulness in Dhamma Vichaya, the investigation of Dhamma, effort, joy, tranquility, concentration, equanimity. Those are the seven factors of awakening. So that the directing of our attention, using the thought processes to come up with some Dhamma principle, and not being afraid to apply the mind in a skillful way. You'll feel whether it's beneficial or not. To be attentive to, what's the feeling when we bring up a certain thought. Might be some thoughts that just, there's this sort of recoiling or a kind of agitation. Well, that is intrinsically is kind of unwholesome or unskillful. It's not beneficial. But there's some thoughts, you direct attention to it, and there's a feeling of uplift. There's a feeling of energizing or joy. There's a feeling of settling or peace. Well, that's very skillful. That's very wholesome. That's to be cultivated and developed. So, recognizing how to apply thought, how to recognize what's skillful, what's not skillful. And that's an integral part of our practice and our training. And sometimes you just plant a seed of a thought and then just let things go quiet. Just like using the word peace, and then just letting everything settle. Just using the word of dispassion, and letting the heart settle into coolness and clarity. And You know, there's all these different qualities that are needed. And then sometimes there's confusion. Well, what do I need? What should I do? And sometimes it brings you this balance, steadiness, just, you know, having a thought or a word that reminds one of something, and it's not letting things spin out too much, but it's a directing of thought. So that ends our program for